Hi, I'm with John Amedio. Hi, John.
Hi.
So, you've given a lot of thought to focusing in relationships, haven't you?
I have, indeed. Yes, since I first encountered focusing in the late 1970s, it occurred to me that it really had profound implications for our intimate relationships. And I hadn't seen anybody really doing much work around that. So I explored it in my own life and started using it with my clients in that way. And I then wrote the book and co-wrote the book in 1986, Being Intimate, which is about applying focusing to our intimate relationships. I mean, it just seemed really clear that the way focusing helped us be in ourselves, if two people can be in themselves in that deeply felt way, it creates a climate where intimacy can emerge, where intimacy can happen. And intimacy is not something we can force or coerce or control, but we can create conditions where it's more likely to come into being. And focusing creates those conditions.
Yeah, so intuitively it makes perfect sense, but maybe we can just, in a way, take a moment to linger on that and unpack some of that, of how focusing creates these conditions.
Mm-hmm, sure. Yeah, by helping us, one, to be in our bodies, help us be more with our feelings, with our feltness about things, our felt sense of things. If we can contact that place and speak congruently from that deeper place, it really softens the environment. Another way to say it is we speak from a more vulnerable, tender place within ourselves, instead of from our blaming and criticism and judgments and accusations or ideas of how we think things are or should be. So in other words, when we get connected to our body and our felt sense in a very gentle way and communicate from that place, the other person is much less likely to be defensive, oppositional. They're much more likely to soften, to hear us because we're not attacking them.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in turn, makes us more likely to feel heard by them. And then that feels good if we're heard. And it creates a positive cycle instead of the usual negative cycles that couples tend to get into.
Yeah. So instead of that negative cycle, which is about, you know, that sense of attack, that sense of being hard, you're talking about that cycle of progressively becoming softer and tender and vulnerable.
Exactly, and not even just in our partnerships, but also with our friends, to be able to communicate from that place and create deeper, more fulfilling connections.
So, again, for somebody who's had the experience of focusing, it's not hard to believe of how that, you know, would be nice. But maybe what would be good is to talk a little bit more about what happens when actually a situation of conflict in a couple is so hardened. You know, what happens, what's your work as a couple therapist with focusing? How do you help people shift from that entrenched position to a softer one?
Well, that's a good question. What I try to do is to help each person connect with their deeper felt sense about what's happening. So what typically happens is, you know, in couples' relationships, that part of the brain tends to get activated when we experience any real or imagined threat to our safety or well-being. We go into that fight, flight, freeze mode. You know, we feel threatened. We feel blamed. Or if we feel the relationship's being jeopardized or being criticized, we get activated. Our nervous system gets activated into that fight, flight, freeze mode. So in other words, we might blame, we might attack the other person, or we might freeze up and get defensive, we might shut down, we might withdraw. So what focusing helps us do, what I try to help my couples to do, is take a breath, slow down, notice how you're feeling in your body right now as you're speaking about that, whatever the difficult issue is. And, you know, notice what the feltness is around that. What are the feelings? What's the felt sense around that?
Yeah.
And if couples can begin to slow down, get in touch with that, communicate from that place, and sometimes I try to help them find words if they can't get any words that reflect that place. And when they can communicate from that place, it tends to soften their partner.
So maybe I want to just even slow that down a little bit, because what you're talking about, you say people are in fight, flight, freeze mode, and they can't communicate from there. And again, in a way, lots of what people expect from couple therapy, traditional couple therapy, is some sense of, you know, understanding of what happens. But what you're saying is that, you know, the nervous system being activated, people cannot actually, are not able to understand until what focusing does is bring them back online.
Exactly. And, you know, John Gottman's done a lot of respected research on this. And he says when people's heart rate is very high, when they're very activated, they're not able to hear each other. And there's good research on that. So focusing helps us slow down enough, kind of settles our nervous system enough, so we can begin to hear each other, hear what the heartfelt feelings are that we're each having, and the heartfelt longings and needs that we have. And if we can express those in a focusing kind of way, we're more likely to be heard, and more likely to create the connection that we're really longing for.
So that there's a dual function of focusing in that part. It, one of them is to actually bring people, give them the ability to be present, and the other is to open them up to a more tender, softer mode.
Yes, it gives people the ability to be present with themselves, to be more present with others. So yeah, if they can be gentle with what they're experiencing inside and hold those feelings and needs and longings that they have in a gentle way, then they get a little more spaciousness around all that. So things begin to settle a little bit more. It becomes less charged. And they can more kind of report their feelings, express their feelings, instead of dumping their feelings on the other person, which tends to push the other person away and shut them down, or activates them attacking you in return.
Yeah.
So these negative cycles, this escalation that often happens with couples, can be shifted, can be replaced with a more positive cycle. If each person can learn that skill of gently coming into themselves in a focusing kind of way, and then communicating what they're noticing as they go inside themselves.
Yeah. So what you're describing is actually something where the work is not just dealing with a couple as a couple, but also training each person to work on developing that capacity to go inside in a focusing way.
Yeah, I take time in the sessions when it feels right to just help one part of the couple, help one of the people focus on what's happening for them. So there's a, there's an intra-psychic part and there's an interpersonal part. You know, there's a piece where it really helps some people can learn to go inside of themselves. And some people are learning to do that outside of the couple's work, You know, some of them are in other kinds of therapy where they're getting connected to their feelings. And that's always helpful. But I selectively take time when it feels right to help one person go inside. And usually the other part of the couple is happy to watch me work with them. They're kind of relieved that the focus is not on them. So that usually works pretty well.
Yeah.
I check in with them to make sure they're still engaged in the process, periodically check in with them. I don't spend too long with one person. Spend maybe 5 minutes, something like that, with part of the couple.
So there's a sense of, you know, part of this process is that the attention of the therapist is shifting from one person to another. At the moment, the attention of the therapist is in that person. It's to encourage that sense of deepening of personal experience.
Right. And I try to stay really present with that person. You know, and focus, you know, using the focusing attitude and that kind of presence to really help them gently go inside and notice what they're experiencing. So, for example, if they have some fear going on, or they felt shame or embarrassed by something, or they have feelings of feeling hurt or sad, they have an opportunity to get in touch with those more primary feelings that often underlie our reactive feelings. To be angry and blaming and the kind of feelings that tend to create escalation of conflict between couples.
Yeah. So, we're talking about breaking that cycle of reactivity, defensiveness, and by going inside.
Yeah, focusing is such a wonderful tool for helping break those cycles between couples, because focusing helps us connect with what's really authentic in ourselves. And when we do that, there tends to be a kind of a settling, and it tends to feel good to connect with what's real in us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can convey that to the other person. And then if we can do that, maybe they'll be able to hear us, maybe for the first time. If we can say it in a way where we're not attacking and blaming them, but instead really holding gently that tender place within ourselves. So as we soften, the other person tends to soften and hear us much, much better.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates, you know, and I've seen this happen with couples, it can create real connection, real tenderness and intimacy between them.
Because instead of experiencing the other person as this hard enemy, mm-hmm. You have a moment to see them, you actually see them in a vulnerable place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when we see people be vulnerable, especially ones we care about, we tend to soften and want to be responsive and give them what they need. I mean, you know, obviously with couples that have high conflict couples that have been conflicted for a long time, it'll take time. It takes time to soften and constantly needs to be reinforced.
Mm-hmm.
This the sense of connectedness. But if couples stay with it, there's often progress.
So, you know, when you say it needs to be reinforced, maybe that's a point, say, in a way, for people who are listening to this, to say to what extent, what's the, you know, the line between use that as a self-help method versus, it, you know, it needs some assistance, some help to be, you know, what would be your words of advice about that?
Yeah, that's a good point, Serge, because it's very difficult for couples to do on their own. You know, there's so much charge. It's not realistic, especially if it's a highly conflicted situation, to expect that you're going to make a lot of progress just doing this on your own. It really helps to have a guide who is either trained in focusing or just very skillful in helping you work with feeling issues. There's actually an approach that's become very popular that I love. It's called Emotionally Focused Therapy for Couples. That's
uh-huh.
by Sue Johnson. She's got a wonderful book called Hold Me Tight, which helps couples work with this. And it's very compatible with focusing. And she's familiar with it, and she likes focusing a lot also. Recognizes how compatible the approaches are. And so whether it's an EFT-oriented therapist, focusing-oriented therapist, someone who can really help hold that space for you to get connected to what's going on for you. Because it's so easy to get activated when you talk to your partner. You know, however well-intended you are, it's difficult for a couple to work things through on their own when there's a lot of conflict and pain and struggle.
Right, right. So some kind of a healthy respect for the difficulty, it's not just something that you can will yourself to go to that place when there is an ongoing strong conflict.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it helps to have good intentions,
mm-hmm.
but you can't will yourself into that place, no matter how well intended you are. People often need some help.
Mm-hmm.
And it's realistic to expect that it's going to, you know, often take some time too and patience, you know, not to expect quick results. I mean, sometimes quick results happen, but if your expectations are for that and that doesn't happen, that's a setup for feeling more shame or bad or what's wrong with me or what's wrong with our relationship that we can't resolve this quickly. You know, we're in an instant gratification society.
Mm-hmm.
But in the realm of relationships, things often take some time.
Yeah, yeah. So, would it make sense to give some kind of a sense of what happens in a session or in a process of, you know, the kind of interaction in a way, some kind of a flavor of what happens?
Sure. Yeah, that's a good idea. And, there was an article on focusing-oriented therapy on the focusingtherapy.org website if people wanted to read more about it.
Mm-hmm.
But and I have an example there that I'll share here, which is a couple where there was a lot of conflict, and one of the issues that came up in the session was that she, let's call her Sue, was angry at him for buying a premium can of cat food for his cat. She was really upset by that. I could spend so much money on this cat food and blah, blah, blah. And so we explored that issue, and obviously she had a lot of anger about it. And so I asked her about that, and she said, yeah, I have a right to be angry. I have a right to be angry about this. You know, as couples often do. And I assured her, of course, she had a right to all of her feelings, including her anger.
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting about how, in a way, some of the words you use. I mean, one is it starts with a can of cat food. So again, it's not like life and death issue, the fate of mankind. Mm-hmm. Then the typical phrase of I have the right to be angry, and it's the language of right, wrong, you know, that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. It feels like there's a very archetypal quality to this fight.
Right, right. It's very contentious. Righteous, and so she's in her camp, he's in his camp, he's right to buy the, you know, I have a right to buy kind of cat food I want for my cat. Don't tell me what to do, you're trying to control me.
Mm-hmm.
These are the kind of conversations couples tend to have that don't go anywhere, right? That just create more and more pain for each of them. They just get in their separate righteous positions. So yeah, how to break a cycle like that is a challenge, is a difficult question, but the way to break it is to invite each of them to connect with what they're really experiencing inside. So if they can take a little time and go inside and notice what they're feeling in their body. So to continue the example, so I ask her, you know, just notice how that anger feels and where you're feeling that in your body. And, you know, just be gentle with that. Notice what that feels like. So she had noticed a knot in her stomach, which she identified as the anger. And mm-hmm. I asked her, just take a little time to notice the knot along with the anger, see if anything more wants to come. So, you know, kind of inviting her to be curious about her experience.
Right.
And, you know, prompted her, as I usually do, to be with it in a gentle, caring way. So gradually she noticed a heavy feeling in her chest, and then she noticed a sense of sadness coming up, which was kind of surprising. She had no idea what it was about, but I asked if it was okay to be with the sadness, and so she said, yeah. So as she stayed with it, something came that was even more surprising. She recognized that her sadness had to do with the death of her own cat many years ago.
Mm.
And she had become very attached to her cat. And she vowed never to let herself get so attached to another pet, because she didn't want to have to feel that kind of grief and loss again. So that was a big insight. And as she saw that, she softened inside. And then she expressed all this to him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I reflected that back. Oh, so she really vowed never to get too attached to another cat. In some way, that connects to how you relate to your partner's buying the premium can of cat food.
Yeah.
And she said, yeah, I want to protect him from the same kind of loss that was so painful for me. So it was becoming clear that her protection was coming from caring about him. You know, so I reflected that back. So you wanting to protect him comes from your caring. Not trying to control him or anything. And she said, I don't want him to feel the same kind of grief. So as she got connected to what was really happening in her and can show that, then he softened. He suddenly realized where she was coming from, that she was coming from caring about him and having all this grief that was in her about her own cat. So that created a tender moment, which led to more of a connection between them in that moment, and a real resolution of that particular conflict.
Yeah. So that's a beautiful example of how, you know, that in a way, her own processing about the, you know, the what the cat food brought, the anger, the shift to sadness, the specific memory, is something that, you know, as a focuser, people are familiar with individually. And what happens here is that, you know, the partner is witnessing it. Mm-hmm. And what is very clear in the way you've described it is actually this is a very intimate moment
mm-hmm.
of being able to witness that.
Exactly, exactly. And she would often complain that he's not hearing her, that he never hears her. But what she didn't realize is that often she was difficult to hear because the way she would communicate was often very blaming and critical. But he could hear her very well now, that she was communicating from this deeper, more vulnerable, felt place. So yeah, so as she got more connected to herself, but creating a climate where she could communicate that, he felt more connected to her, And it started to create the intimacy that they have both been longing for but haven't known how to create.
Yeah.
So another way to say that is the intimacy kind of comes through the back door, not the front door. We can't make intimacy happen or force it or shake the other person. But we can create conditions where the intimacy is more likely to arise. Those are conditions where we go into ourself in that focusing kind of way.
So that sounds like a very nice description of couples, focusing-oriented couples therapy, that sense of creating the conditions for intimacy.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yes. Yes. Yes, and it, you know, it takes many sessions like that to reinforce that way of communicating with each other, because people tend to go back to their default mode of communication. It's so easy to slip back into blame, criticism, wanting to be right. So it takes reinforcing this new pattern of slow pausing, slowing down, taking a breath, going into your body, and communicating more and more from that felt place.
Yeah, yeah. So there's definitely that sense of it's a process that takes time to put into place, because we're talking about activated nervous system, mm-hmm. and that sense of being something that needs to be put in place and trained to compensate the intensity of fear.
Right. Yeah, we have to have a healthy respect for the amygdala, that part of the brain that gets easily activated when there's a real or imagined threat to our well-being, as I was saying earlier. So that part of the brain that gets triggered, like in less than a second, like a fraction of a second, we're scanning for danger. Is this dangerous? Am I safe? Am I not safe? And if we don't feel safe, we tend to get really inwardly aroused, activated, and we attack. We blame.
Mm-hmm.
It's happened so quickly. And then the other person very quickly gets activated as well. And then we're off to the races, and very unsatisfying, very difficult, very painful, agonizing dialogue.
Yeah, yeah. And so here in this example, what we're talking about is a sense of each person feeling controlled by the other, and talking about rights and, you know, sense of, you know, being in a way controlled. What about other situations where, in a way, people are trying to fix each other? You know, they say, oh, I see what's wrong with you. If only you were doing this, you know, that kind of situation. Obviously, trying to fix the relationship from that place is not working.
Yeah. Well, there I might help them get in touch with and talk about the underlying longing. Like, what are they really longing for? What are they trying to get by fixing the other person? You know, maybe they want to change something about, you know, maybe the other person doesn't listen well. Or they want the other person to work less because they're working all the time. And the accusation is that your work is more important than me, is more important than your family. And they're very righteous and blaming about that. So if I can help them go, if I can help someone like that go inside and slow down, that person might be aware of, oh, you know, I'm just really missing my partner. We don't have as much time together as I want. And there's a longing, there's a desire to be together more, because I so much value our company, value your company and being together. So again, that would be shifting to a more vulnerable longing or need that underlies the wanting to fix the other person, wanting to change their schedule or accusing them of not being, not making the relationship the priority.
And so the more vulnerable part is not just in the wording of the feeling, but is also hearing it in the tone of voice and the affect and the presence of the other person.
Yes, yeah, which again is where the focusing is very helpful, because it changes how we're experiencing ourselves, how we're experiencing what's happening inside. And if we don't have that inner shift in our feeling about it, you know, we can use the politically correct words, but the tone of voice can still be very attacking and blaming. You know, people are kind of psychic and kind of feel that when our energy is just really blaming and attacking, no matter what the words are. So it's important that the words are congruent with that more vulnerable, tender, felt place within ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. So again, it's not that, you know, the magic words, but you're, again, changing the conditions, you know, creating the conditions for a different experience. It helps people connect at that level.
Right, Serge, and I also often like to say when I talk about this topic that the problems in relationships are often not communication problems so much. You know how people often say, well, we have a communication problem. And yeah, that's true. But on a deeper level, it's a self-awareness problem. Like they're not aware of what they're most deeply experiencing. And once they become more aware of what they're truly experiencing, like the sadness and the sense of not having time together, the sense of missing you, the more vulnerable feelings and longings, when we can share that, then we become more aware of what's really happening in us. Then we can communicate that.
Mm-hmm.
So communication always is only as good as we are aware of what's really happening deeply within us. So our work needs to be to uncover, excavate, uncover the deeper feelings. And then we have something to communicate that is probably different than what we have been communicating.
Yeah. So we're talking about increased intimacy within the couple, but also within each person.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And that's the premise of a lot of the writing that I do, is being intimate with others is predicated on being intimate with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two sides of the same coin. That the more intimate, the more connected we are with ourselves, the more we're creating conditions that create intimacy with the other.
Yeah. So maybe you used in the paper, you know, that is on the website, an expression, a phrase that I liked a lot, which you were talking about how change happens as a couple learns to tolerate the discomfort of lingering on the relational edge. And I really liked that expression of the tolerating the discomfort of lingering on the relational edge. You know, so maybe do you want to expand a little bit on that?
Yeah, often we have difficulty tolerating uncomfortable and difficult sensations that come up within us. And a lot of our personal growth work and where focusing tends to go is to help us become more comfortable with what's been feeling uncomfortable within us. So in other words, creating a space where we can be with the tight places in our abdomen or chest or the jumpy places, the jittery places, the constricted places, and just really make a space for that. And be connected more and more to accept that life is uncomfortable sometimes. You know, it's not that we're supposed to be comfortable. We've got this belief in our society we should always be comfortable all the time. Sometimes it's okay to not be comfortable. And can we become more comfortable with being uncomfortable and just work with that edge, just kind of linger on that edge a little bit more and be with that. Notice how that feels in our body to be uncomfortable. Pause and take a breath and be gentle with that. And then it tends to shift and open up as we attend to it with that kind of gentle, caring presence. That's the good news. Things tend to shift. The discomfort tends to shift if we can expand our tolerance for it.
Mm-hmm.
And a related point is that people often have a difficult time tolerating positive feelings. People, we also need to expand our tolerance, if I can use that word, for intimacy, for love, for caring. Often we're not used to feeling what intimacy is like in our body. You know, when you really feel connected to another person, can you really let that in?
Mm-hmm.
Open to how good that feels. Can you really breathe that in, really open, allow your body to open to that experience of connecting? Which is another way I bring in the focusing often with couples. When something positive happens, when there's a shift, when I can sense there's more of a sense of closeness, I ask them, is that okay just to notice how that feels in your body right now? You're feeling a little closer with each other right now. Can you just let that in? Just take a moment and experience that. So what I'm trying to do there is to kind of help them expand their tolerance, their experience of positive feelings.
Yeah. Well,
don't take the time to do that.
So it's really a sense of expanding our capacity to experience feelings, whether they be unpleasant or pleasant.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and that helps us live more fully.
Mm-hmm.
It helps us to live richer, fuller lives, to appreciate this precious life that we have more and more by feeling as much and as often as we can what's really happening right now, whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, neutral.
Yeah.
It kind of dovetails with the Buddhist path also, to be open to experience as it is instead of how we would like it to be.
Yeah. So maybe that's a good segue to say, what's the role of the therapist? What's the experience of the therapist as a focusing-oriented couple therapist? being there with life and yeah. the feelings inside oneself mm-hmm. and the clients.
Yeah, well, when I'm working with a couple, I try to keep my attention both with the couple and also with what's happening inside of me as I'm working with them. So I try to be as present as possible with myself, with them, try to create a safe place for them to go into their authentic feelings. The more comfortable I am with the full range of my experience, then the more comfortable I am working with them as a couple. If I'm freaking out because they're angry or sad or hurt or expressing loneliness, if they sense I'm uncomfortable with that, they're probably not going to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Something kind of mysterious that happens there. So part of my work is to be more and more comfortable with my own experience, my own full range of feelings, so that that becomes self-communicating to my clients, that they're safe with me. They don't have mm-hmm. to protect me from too much intense feeling in the room. You know, they can go into those deeper places of vulnerability, and if they sense that I'm comfortable with that, then they'll feel safer going into those feelings.
Yeah.
So that has a lot to do with, you know, the therapist's own personal growth and how much progress they've made, how deeply they've gone into their own selves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So
it's not that we have to be perfect either. So it's an ongoing process.
Yeah. So as we're coming toward the end, do you feel that there is something that might be a good conclusion or bookmark or opening up to some more areas, to carry forward or something else?
Well, maybe we haven't touched on the issue of taking risks might be a good one to
Great.
In this conversation, because mm-hmm. Often that amid the part of our brain, the amygdala that scanning for gains, we want to stay safe.
Mm-hmm.
But the tragic irony is often we're less safe if we're not willing to take risks I mean, we often don't want to take risks because we feel like we might not be safe. We might open our heart with someone and then they drop our heart on the floor and it splatters and crashes on the ground. I mean, that's the risk that could happen. It may not go well if we share more vulnerably with another person. But there are two things there. One is, even if it doesn't go well, if we know we can come back into ourselves and hold those tender places within ourselves, and that's why sometimes meditation can be helpful, or having a friend or therapist to talk to about these things can be helpful. And just really knowing we can be with whatever happens within ourselves by taking that risk. And that's just the confidence.
So it's interesting because the language of risk, in a way, the images that it tends to brings up, I think, in many people, is images of dangerous situations, say, fast cars, extreme sports, a war, and actually what you're talking about is a sense of safety, reassurance, gentleness that helps foster the ability to take risks.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Often people think, well, I'm a courageous person because I drive sports cars and I do these dangerous things, I do skydiving or whatever. Or in business, I invest lots of people, I invest a lot of money in things that will take a lot of risks. But how much are we willing to risk in our love relationships? That's where courage really, really matters the most. To take the risk to share that you felt hurt by something your partner said to you. Or take the risk to share someone who you're dating, that, I'm noticing I'm really liking our time together and would like to see you more. How would you feel about that?
Right. So it's a risk that instead of the experience of the risk being toughening up and being hard, it's actually the experience of the risk is in allowing yourself to go to a softer place.
Exactly. That's what takes real virility, real inner strength to share those tender, vulnerable places. And to show ourselves, to allow ourselves to be seen in that vulnerable place, because that's a big part of who we are, as a vulnerable human being.
Mm.
And it can start to feel less and less vulnerable, interestingly, as we become more vulnerable and open. It's less scary to do it as we do it. It just begins to feel more and more natural. And it's not that big a deal. We just share who we are, and if it goes well, then it's great. Then we really enjoy the connection, which can also happen when we take a risk. We just enjoy more and more connectedness. it doesn't go well, then we come back into ourselves, we learn something, we shake the dust off our feet, and we move on. And we try it with somebody else. Maybe that wasn't meant to work with that person. And there's other people out there who will appreciate us sharing in this deeper, vulnerable, open way.
Very nice, very nice. So it sounds like a very nice way to end this conversation. Thanks, John.
Very welcome. My pleasure.
This is part of the Focusing Conversations series of the Focusing Institute, hosted by Serge Prengel. All contents are protected by copyright. You can find other such conversations on our website at focusing.org/conversations.